Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. The state of Tennessee has climbed three notches in the health ranking published annually by the United Health Foundation, moving from 42nd in 2010 to 39th in 2011. A contributing factor, though certainly not the only one, is the work of the Adams Chair of Excellence in Healthcare Services and the Center for Health and Human Services at MTSU. Dr. Martha Jo Edwards holds the endowed chair. She's the director of the center, and she's our guest on the program today. We'll discuss the many activities in which Edwards and her colleagues are involved in an effort to provide people with the information they need to make healthier lifestyle choices after a healthy dose of information from MTSUnews.com.
Here are a few of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. A special new iPad-only mini version of MTSU Magazine has now been published to revisit some of the publication stories and sprinkle in a few new ones. From newly minted distinguished alumni to expert commentary on vampire culture in an age of True Blood and Twilight, the mini version covers a broad range of topics and perspectives. In his first State of the College address delivered November 8th, Dean Bud Fisher charted a new course for the MTSU College of Basic and Applied Sciences. When it comes to decisions that are directly related to departmental operations, such as funding travel, Fisher said he would leave decisions to the departments. MTSU alumnus Christy Underden Dubois, a relative newcomer, was part of the recent 2012 National Storytelling Festival in historic Jonesboro, Tennessee. For MTSU News Anytime, go to MTSUnews.com.
Dr. Edwards, thanks for being on the program. Welcome.
Thank you for the invitation.
Without getting too deep into the statistical weeds, what broad categories of criteria does the United Health Foundation use to come up with these state-by-state health rankings? And when we establish that foundation, we'll get into the things that the chair is doing.
Sure. Well, the United Health Foundation, for a number of years, have began to look at state-by-state in areas that we know impact the health of the population. And each year they use 52 criteria and look at each one of the state's data sets to determine if there are the number of years of life lost, which is a statistical calculation based on an amalgamation of a lot of different things, different diseases that cause morbidity and mortality. And they began to then collapse those all together, looking at years of life lost. They also look at things such as obesity and the economy of the state and binge drinking. Their data sets come from the Center for Disease Control and a lot of different state collected data that look at a variety of measures such as accidents, alcohol use, even divorce rates, things that have to do more with the socioeconomic poor part of our state that one wouldn't necessarily think has a lot to do with health, but it does. Even divorce rates, things of that nature.
The hot topic these days, perhaps partly due to First Lady Michelle Obama's emphasis on healthy eating, is obesity, especially childhood obesity. You were the founding chair of the State Obesity Task Force. What has been done in Tennessee to address this issue?
Well, the State Obesity Task Force was formulated after we went to a Southern Regional Summit on Obesity and found that Tennessee was the only one that didn't have a state health plan, and obesity health plan, excuse me. And so we came back, those that attended, and said, we've got to get people across the state aware and working together to put into place things that would reduce the obesity rates of both adults and children. We already had a concerted effort of trying to get the coordinated school health, which is a model out of the Center for Disease Control, into our schools, and we are the only funded coordinated school health statewide in the United States looking at this particular issue. And it includes a variety of issues, not just obesity. It includes measurement of the BMI and measurement of weight at different times in their elementary school and high school career, but it also includes physical education and taking their blood pressure and taking parameters that would give us an indication of how healthy they're going to be as an adult. So we looked at coordinated school health as being one of those avenues, since we were already getting involved with that, that we could get behind and make sure that the legislature was apprised of how important this particular issue is. It includes drug use, tobacco use. It's such a broad perspective, and nutrition in schools, the vending machines in schools. So a lot of those issues we began to look at statewide and look at as they had an impact on the health of our citizens. So coordinated school health was one of those target things that we began to support. We also wrote a grant for the Center for Disease Control to give us some additional funding to take give us the opportunity to look statewide, not just a small group of people. That was funded, and Joan Randall of Vanderbilt University has been the executive director of that particular project, and we have created a statewide plan, and the statewide plan is on the web if you want to see it. It's Eat Well, Play More in Tennessee, and what this does is an attempt to give each community an opportunity to look at projects that have been successful in other states, been successful in Tennessee, but predominantly try to get them to look more seriously at the issues that are in their community that impacts obesity. Is it because we don't have playgrounds? Is it because we don't have bikes, trails, or trails for our students to walk to school? What are the things that are going on in our communities, and how can we impact those?
There's no one-size-fits-all solution.
No, there's not.
Any more than our clothes are one-size-fits-all, especially after we've eaten a lot.
Well, and especially because we are, as everyone in Tennessee knows, we are a very diverse state, with each county having its own needs. And so to give a one-size-fits-all, what might work in Davidson County may not be very relevant in Walker County or, Rutherford County, for that matter. We have very rural settings, and then we have very metropolitan settings. And so the goal was to get each community involved. It's the grassroots community level that can make a difference in those communities. So the strategy was to put together a sort of a guideline for these counties to take a look at what is the data in their county, and then what can they do as they assess what's going on in their community to make a change. And we know that they are actively involved now in making changes, small changes. So an example, one of the parks and recreations systems have changed their policy on the kind of food that they will sell at vending places within the events that are going on in their community. So it's for everything from that to going to the schools and seeing what we can take out of the vending machines and replace it with something that's a little healthier, to see what we can do with the foods that we provide for the students in the classroom or during class day, and make sure that that is a balanced, nutritious set of guidelines that they are following.
We'll have more in a moment. This is MTSU On the Record.
Tennessee's farm families contribute to our state's economy, nutrition, and culture. The Tennessee Century Farms program at MTSU's Center for Historic Preservation acknowledges farms that have been in the same family for at least 100 years. To date, the program has certified more than 1,000 farms. This is Kenita Hankins, director of the Tennessee Century Farms program.
And for all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Our guest is Dr. Martha Jo Edwards, director of the MTSU Center for Healthcare Services, and right now we're talking about our eating habits in Tennessee. How difficult is it for public health professionals to break through these cultural ties that we have to what is called Southern cooking or soul food cooking, because we're attached to it in two ways. One, it's part of our identity as Southerners, and two, it's comfort food to us. There's a psychological component because it's what mama made and grandma made, and it makes us feel good. It brings us back to a time when things were perhaps a little simpler in our childhoods. Unfortunately, depending upon the way it's prepared, it might also contribute to cardiovascular disease and a host of other issues. So how do you break through that cultural attachment we have to food that might not necessarily be all that good for us?
Very slowly. You've put that to words very nicely, because we are facing not only what feels good to us and tastes good to us and what our history has been, but also the impact of those memories that we have. And so it is more difficult. But if we can capture the attention of students while they're in school, or capture the attention of mothers, young mothers with WIC programs and so on, and teach them how to cook those meals in a little healthier way, removing the pork fat from the green beans and providing other opportunities for savory additions to those foods to make them palatable, but not less, but less caustic to the body, less fat, less sodium, things of that nature. So it's a long struggle, and it is a very slow process to change those things.
We'll be back with more on MTSU on the Record right after this.
Expanding Your Horizons is an annual hands-on science and math conference for middle and high school girls. EYH enables girls to investigate careers in science and math and to talk with female leaders in those fields that are so essential to our nation's future. EYH also provides the girls with fun hands-on activities and allows them to meet girls with similar interests. I'm Dr. Judith Iriarte-Gross, EYH Director.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Dr. Martha Jo Edwards, who is the Center for Health and Human Services Director and the holder of the endowed chair, the Adams Chair of Excellence in Healthcare Services here at MTSU. In Rutherford County, the Center for Health and Human Services has started this Yes, I Can Diabetes self-management series of workshops based on a model from Stanford University. Tell us how those workshops work and whether there's a chance that they will spread to other counties.
Well, let me start with the process. The process is a 6 weeks process. It isn't a one shot. It requires that the people who agree to come to this, and these are usually either early diagnosed diabetics or their family members or a pre-diabetic condition. And we invite them to come. It's free, totally free, and invite them to come to different centers. We've had some in the churches. We've had them in parks and recreation facilities. We've had them on the university campus. We try to place them within their communities. We only ask for a commitment that they will come to 6 sessions and that those sessions are 2.5 hours. This is, as you said, based on a Stanford University model, and it's based on a peer-to-peer education model. We do trainings here for nurses, community health educators, or just interested personnel to go out and do the same model within their community. So, and what we are doing is asking people to share the information that they've learned, and we start out by talking about exercise, food limitations, what they need to do to be able to monitor their diabetes. We invite them to bring a family member, because oftentimes diabetes changes the household and how they eat. And so we want the household, those in the household, to be comfortable with making those changes that will work for their family. We talk about exercise, and we do behavior change modifications in the sessions we have each week. Going around and talking about a particular model that they will take on for the week, such as they commit to doing maybe walking when they haven't been walking, 3 times a week around the block. And then the next week they will report on that. And so what we're doing is trying to change behaviors. Most people, when diagnosed with diabetes, are so overwhelmed with the whole issue that they don't think they're in control. And this program is geared to letting them think and letting them know that they, A, are in control. And the more control they take, the better off they will be with being able to control diabetes over a long period of time. It teaches the same kinds of concepts. It's a model that works. It is a model that is inexpensive to work. We see this being replicated throughout our state, and I think we're beginning to see some real results. We just received when they did the EFFIS for fat, which is Robert Wood Johnson funded document that looks at each state and gives some information about data for each state.
Robert Wood Johnson is a nonprofit foundation.
It's a nonprofit foundation, and it is funded looking at different states and ranking them. So in Tennessee, we have been in the third rank and the fourth rank of the fattest in the states. And we used to say, thank heavens for Mississippi, because Mississippi usually is number one, mm-hmm. number one being the most obese adult obesity ranking, most obese in the United States. But we are down to 39th, and so we're down quite a bit.
We'll take another break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about the evil weed. No, not marijuana. This is MTSU on the Record. We're back with Dr. Martha Jo Edwards, holder of the Adams Chair of Excellence in Healthcare Services and the Center for Health and Human Services Director here at MTSU. MTSU is now a tobacco-free campus, so bring us up to date on the center's activities regarding tobacco awareness.
Well, tobacco has been an issue on campus for a number of years. It's an issue within our state, as you know. We rank very high in the number of students in high school who smoke and in the number of adults who smoke. And we've made some efforts in the state by increasing taxes on tobacco and restricting places where smoking can occur. And that's what we've done here on MTSU's campus. Several campuses in the state of Tennessee have also adopted these practices. And our desire is that we make students aware that we're concerned about them smoking, not just smoking on campus, although that's the avenue we have, but getting them to think about smoking, period, and trying to keep them from lighting up a cigarette without first thinking that this could be harmful to our health. And so we've had a long effort in trying to get MTSU to be a smoke-free campus. And this past year, the president signed that into law for the campus. And in January of 2012, we became a smoke-free campus. It is an attempt, as I said, not to be restrictive of people's rights, but it is an attempt to have them look at themselves as they are going through higher education and say, what are those things that I need to know to be a good citizen? What are those things that I need to know and be able to do to be a good employee? And what are those things that I am learning that will help my life be better? Smoking is one of those. We're seeing the power that the tobacco company has to be able to buy their way into our visual images, either in magazines or journals or on the big screen, it's really a problem. And the biggest problem, of course, is that it represents to the younger people being cool. But the more we can get that into the mindset of the high school students or the middle school students, that it isn't necessarily cool. And the best way to do that is to make it inconvenient. You know, if you make it that inconvenient, you find that people find ways not to smoke. And then you add the tax situation on top of it. It makes it more complicated for a child or a middle schooler to come up with the money to buy a cigarette or to buy a pack of cigarettes when they're $10, $11, $12, $15 versus if they were just a couple of dollars a pack. So we're looking at all avenues to make it less convenient. And then you give them the images that say this is harmful to your health. It's not going to be useful to you on a long-term basis. I think that keeping it in front of their sight, repeated message in a variety of settings is what changes health behaviors or behaviors that promote health. And so that's the message and the strategies that are being used.
What about chewing tobacco? I'm from a small town in the South in a rural county, and I went to high school with a lot of kids who grew up smoking, not only smoking, but perhaps they preferred to dip, snuff, or to chew tobacco. Is that still popular among young people?
Unfortunately, it's very popular in Tennessee, and it's popular especially in certain sports. We find that team members of certain sports share that as a common...
Baseball.
Okay, baseball is one of those. And we don't see that necessarily because the coaches are promoting it, but I don't know that we have any data that says the coaches are not allowing it to occur. And part of the reason is that it's unlike smoke, where we can say, the smoke in the air affects bystanders. And also they can carry around a small receptacle, you know, like a Coke can or a bottled drink can. So that makes it a little easier to hide on a school campus than if you're lighting up a cigarette and they've made it a smoke-free campus or a tobacco-free campus. The smoking part is easier to monitor than is the snuff and chewing tobacco. I tell you, the images that we have available to us of people who have done that and then developed cancer of the lip, cancer of the throat, cancer in their mouth.
Well, you lose your teeth. People lose their entire jaws in some cases.
Exactly. And those seem to make an impact on high school students. You know, students like gross things. And we've found that images such as those that represent the stage down win from them using that product over a number of years begins to sink in and make a difference. But it still is a very serious problem in Tennessee.
We'll be back with more in a moment. This is MTSU on the Record.
Specialized training in forensic science prepares tomorrow's professionals through the Forensic Institute for Research and Education, or FIRE. The Forensic Anthropology Search and Recovery Team assists law enforcement with skeletal remains at crime scenes. Legendary forensic scientists provide lectures free to the public, and high school students work realistic crime scenes each summer at our CSI MTSU camp. I'm Dr. Hugh Berryman, Director of FIRE.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Dr. Martha Jo Edwards, who holds the Adams Chair of Excellence in Healthcare Services, she's our guest today. She's also the director of the Center for Health and Human Services at MTSU. Tennessee is still really high in infant mortality, and that seems to be an absolutely appalling in light of the fact that we live in an industrialized, wealthy, supposedly sophisticated nation. It just doesn't seem that it's the sort of thing that should happen. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you're absolutely right. One would not think that that should be high on our agenda, but the Commissioner of Health, when he began to look at he comes from Virginia, when he began to look at the statistics from Tennessee, he brought that out as one of his top priorities. And the state has a pretty sophisticated report system that they have to determine the cause of these infants who have died unexplained or unanticipated. And one of the things that our center has been involved in is the training of first responders, both from law enforcement, the firefighters and emergency medical services. And part of our training has been to train them how to use a particular form. It's called a SUDI form, and it's from the Center for Disease Control, and how to use that form to collect data. Now, that sounds pretty simplistic, but if, in fact, when they go to the ME's office, the medical examiner's office, for an autopsy, and the law does require that an autopsy be performed on everyone under 18 that dies in an unexplained manner. And if they don't have the right data, if they don't have a scene investigation, the data that tells them a little bit of how this child was found, what was the room, the temperature of the room, what did it look like? Was it a cluttered room? Was it a place that would be safe for a child to be in? How will we know how we can clearly identify the cause of death? And then if you don't know really the cause of death, you don't know how to develop programs that help us reduce that number. This past year, we had 127 unexplained deaths, and one would have thought that, and we might have heard the term SIDS. SIDS is sudden infant death, and it's a diagnosis of exclusion. If you can't find a cause, and they, after an extensive review and an ME's pathology report, then oftentimes it'll be classified as a SIDS, or a sudden infant death, which is an like I said, it's a diagnosis of excluding everything else.
You can't just jump to the conclusion that it is SIDS until you have tried to ascertain whether or not it might have been some other cause.
Right. And with the 127 that we have this year, and they're, I'll just use that number for this year, the goal is to take a look at each one of those and to clearly identify how and why they died. And then to take that same data and develop programs so that we can help mothers, fathers, family members reduce the risk of those children dying unnecessarily or without a disease process. So one of the things that we do is this training program. It is required by law that all of these first responders do this training so that this data goes not only to the medical examiner, which helps the medical examiner with the pathology report, but also to the child fatality review teams. And these are across our state. And the child fatality review teams, their job is to take a look at each of those and say, yes, we've got a problem here. And one of the things that we found out of the data set now that more and more people first responders are being educated in the right approach to collecting this data and delivering this data is that we have a serious problem with overlay. Overlay simply means that a child has been found in the bed or found to have died because the parent sleeping with a child, co-sleeping, and that particular issue has risen to the top of one of those things that is causing many of these deaths.
So, does it not occur to these parents that they might accidentally roll over on top of their child?
Well, of course, I think it occurs to them, but you know how tired you are as a mother, and the child wakes up in the middle of the night, and you're going to breastfeed, and the next thing you know, you've fallen asleep, and then if you're overweight or if you've had drugs, and many of them are experiencing some problem with sleeping. They may have taken drugs for that, or they may have been recreational drugs or alcohol, and rolling over on the child would not be something that they would recognize in the middle of the night. So it's important that we get the message to families, to parents, that, you know, co-sleeping is a problem and that the children need to be in a bassinet, and a bassinet with a tight sheet and nothing over them and no toys and none of those things in the bassinet to make sure that the child has a safe sleep environment. So there's an entire program called Safe Sleep, and that's come out of the data that we've had in Tennessee. So the infant mortality is not just an issue of poor nutrition, lack of health care, early preterm delivery, all those things are real, but one of the things that we've found is that it's also the sleeping environment. And so there comes a point that we can address that through a program, getting that word out, making sure that new mothers understand that through the health departments, through OBGYN departments, things of that nature, doctor's offices, so that we alert them to this is an issue that they need to pay attention to.
And if you want to learn more about any or all of the initiatives that the Adams Chair or the MTSU Center for Health and Human Services has to help make Tennessee a healthier state, contact Dr. Martha Jo Edwards at 615-898-2905. Dr. Edwards, thank you for being our guest today.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.